Roads, bridges, rails, and rivers. Farmers use them all to get a crop to end users in the U.S. and overseas. The problem is, roads, bridges, rails, and rivers require plenty of upkeep, and that means funding. We're getting another week of AgriTalk started with weather, used machinery, and making it easier to move grain and livestock.
Live from your highway to information via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with machinery Pete Greg Peterson. Then we are absolutely privileged to welcome U.S. Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao. Then Mike Steenhook from the Soy Transportation Coalition joins us. And right after the news, Michael Clark from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much. Yes, a press release was just out from the Department of Transportation, and they are announcing the availability of a new toolkit for use in rural areas to make it easier for, I'm just right now going to say people, because I don't know exactly who it's available to, for people to access some of the grants, some of the funding that is available for infrastructure projects made available through the Department of Transportation. So I'm looking forward to getting the details of that from U.S. Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao. Should be a very interesting conversation. And of course, I've got a couple of other things on the list that I have planned to chat with the secretary about. So it should be a very interesting conversation this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A transportation rich show today. We start
it
with
really
transport
is.
by tractor, you know, if you like.
Exactly.
And then,
I got some notes from Greg Peterson on the things that he wants to talk about. This, I can't wait to get to the conversation with him. I mean, we talk about record-setting prices all the time, but he's got one item in particular that I'm very interested in finding out why this thing set a record price over the weekend. I cannot wait. I'll just give you
tease.
A hint. It's a small square John Deere baler record price. I got to know why.
Really?
Yes. I mean, that thing just brings up all kinds of childhood memories of riding the rack and working the mow. So
we had the Ferguson model here on our place. So
Absolutely.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what we had as well. And of course, we'll get to the weather with Michael Clark in just a couple of moments. All right, let's get to it. What you got, Davis?
Chip, White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow said over the weekend, despite a resurgence in coronavirus cases in some hotspots, he believes the economic V-shaped recovery is still in play. Kudlow pointed to data released last week showing sales of existing homes up 20.7% in June after having dropped 9.7% in May. Another report revealed an increase in U.S. manufacturing in June. That's the first sign of improvement in that sector since February. This as gold prices hit a new record and the U.S. dollar sank to the lowest level in 2 years versus a basket of other major currencies. The spot gold price, Chip, up 27% since the start of 2020.
Bubba's losing his mind. You know, I get his texts on a regular basis. I'm talking about Todd Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. And crazy is the new normal is how his latest text starts. It says that the markets are acting a bit irrationally in here, but doggone it, we've got the Dow up 115 points. We've got the dollar retreating big time. We've got gold making new highs. It feels like an inflation trade, but it's hard to figure out exactly why we're not getting that support over into the ag commodities right now.
The U.S. Federal Reserve is debating how to support the economy, but says it is not likely to rule out fresh stimulus measures this week. The Joint Economic Committee is slated to meet tomorrow for a hearing on reducing uncertainty during the economic recession spurred by the pandemic. The Fed has indicated it has no plans to alter its current interest rate policy, Chip.
Yeah, I'm sure that Bubba would say that we've got the Fed put still in this market, that no matter what happens, we're not going to see anything change on the monetary policy. And as a result, that's going to keep some money flowing into equities.
U.S. negotiators still plan to meet with Chinese officials to discuss progress made on the Phase 1 trade agreement in August, probably. The confab is viewed as an important inflection point, according to a source at the South China Morning Post. The palaver's aim is to assess progress from both sides. Meanwhile, tensions continue to heat up as the flag at the U.S. consulate in Chengdu was lowered in the early morning hours today. This as Federal Bureau of Investigation accuses China of harboring an ex-military officer wanted for visa offenses at its consulate in San Francisco. Soon after delivering that accusation, the woman was arrested. How do you like them apples?
That there's a little intrigue in that story, and we're just going to have to wait for some of the details to come through.
Well, Senate Republicans are hoping to release their latest COVID-19 aid package later this afternoon. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows said on Sunday that Congress may have to issue a stopgap bill to maintain the now controversial enhanced unemployment benefits to Americans. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said she spent the weekend in Washington hoping that the bill would be released. Pelosi commented over the weekend the House would not recess until the matter is settled, Chip.
Well, and I think some of the Senate Republicans are willing to hold Speaker Pelosi to that. And this could be a little longer negotiation than what most people are looking for.
A recent Wall Street Journal NBC News poll found that just 13% of likely American voters are undecided ahead of the November elections. And Chip, I got to get this in here. I don't know what the deal is. The Kansas State Department of Agriculture reports residents have received unsolicited packages of seeds that appear to have come from China. The department believes the seeds could be for an invasive species, introduce diseases to local plants, or could be harmful to livestock. The mysterious seed packages have been received in a few states as well. If you get some weird seeds in the mail, just don't open them. Contact your state Department of Agriculture. Don't open the seeds.
I don't know what this is. Do not open the seeds. No. Oh, my gosh. Crazy stuff. All right. Thank you, Davis. Yeah. Let's bring in Michael Clark, VamWX.com. How you doing, Michael?
Chip, how are you?
I'm feeling much relieved after a very hot weekend here in the middle of the country, Michael. We've got some cooler temperatures coming our way.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. The next 5 days is going to run seasonal averages to slightly below, and then in the 6 to 10, we've got a really nice cool down coming after possibly a nice big weekend rain system for the Eastern Corn Belt.
Okay, Eastern Corn Belt. Are we talking? Is Illinois going to catch this?
I don't know. I'm talking more about Indiana and Ohio.
Okay.
Illinois, maybe the southern half of the state. There's some uncertainty there, but there's certainly a potential for a nice slow-moving rain system this weekend.
Okay, boy. And so, when you say slow-moving rain system, I start conjuring up ideas of 2-3 inches of rain.
Yeah. The European and the Canadian models are certainly heavy with their rainfall suggestions, for sure. Absolutely.
All right. Well, what about over to the west? Nebraska, western Iowa, where soils are pretty dry right now. Any relief there?
I don't think so, Chip. I'm looking at probabilities of an inch of rain the next 10 days. Some of the ensembles have 0% probabilities. Just really no. And some of the driest parts of Iowa, unfortunately, right now, I just don't see any big relief anywhere in the short term, for sure.
Well,
so,
that's
drier west.
Drier west, but cooler west, too. I mean, those cooler temperatures could hide some of the effects.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely going to be a much cooler next week, for sure.
I'm not going to turn that down. I'm going to go ahead and take that, Michael.
All right, good buddy.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you later. That's Michael Clark, BamWX.com. All right, when we come back, we're going to get an update from Greg Peterson, Machine Repeat, coming up next on AgriTalk. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
I don't know what you're thinking, so call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Crazy. All it takes to get this bump is one mention of Bubba.
Mm-hmm. That's all it takes.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Just a reminder, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have a conversation with U.S. Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao right here on AgriTalk. But first, we've got Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, on the line with us. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Chip?
Doing real fine, real fine. Hey, if you've got any questions for Greg, give us a holler. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us, and when you do, make sure that you include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it. All right. Okay. I'm crossing my fingers. I'm hoping that I've got the right one, but let's get to it. What do you got for the pick of the week, Greg?
This might have been the hardest week ever to single it down and pick one out, Chip, because we had so many high-interest items, but I got to go with the 1993 John Deere 7800 two-wheel drive tractor that sold Saturday, Paris, Missouri, our friends at Wheeler Auctions and Real Estate. This was a tractor owned by, I think, Brian Warning was his name. And, again, 360 hours on it. It brought $86,000, all-time record high auction price on a Deere 7800. And, again, I mean, these things are pushing 25, 30 years old. So imagine how many I've seen sold, but you know, basically a like new one here. I think Brian had owned it, Chip, since 94. He bought it, had like 300 hours on it. So he had it for like 25, 26 years. And the previous high that I'd ever seen was kind of interesting. I got looking this morning, was on a sale I covered. I actually have a YouTube video of it. It was on my birthday in 2009. December 1st, 09, in Madison, South Dakota, there was a 93 model, just under 1,200 hours, it brought 81,000. So, again, 86K Saturday, that was a lot of interest in that thing.
Boy, I tell you what, this is a 27, 28-year-old machine with 360 hours on it, Greg. It's almost like that was a savings account of some sorts.
It was. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. I mean, and actually, I mean, the things we talk about it and that I write and blog about, I'm just pulling forward some of these examples. We got a few other ones here too, but I mean, particularly now, I mean, you couldn't predict it 27 years ago, interest rates would be nil. Right. But farmers are smart. I mean, they know, they see these things. When these things pop up for sale years later, when they're like new with hardly any hours, they sell for more than new. So, you know, it's a weird deal, but it's real. And so it's quite a force out there.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. We'll talk more about that here in just a little bit. The one that I was hoping would get the pick of the week, hopefully we're going here now. Come on.
You wanted to go Baylor for pick of the week, huh?
I wanted it, yes. What is the deal?
Well, this was amazing. Folks, if you caught my blog yesterday on machinerypete.com or Facebook or Twitter or whatever, there was an old John Deere 24T small square baler that sold Thursday. Our friends at Dream Dirt in Iowa there, they have great online auctions on machinery and real estate. Jason Smith and his crew do a great job, have for years. And this 24T, I got a heads up on it a couple days before it sold, like, oh my God, this thing is going nuts. And it wound up selling for $6,825. Now, again, I'm an old dude. I've been doing this for over 30 years. The previous high auction price I'd ever seen on a 24T baler was $3,300.
Yeah.
That was 2.5 years ago. Big Iron had a one like new in Auburn, Nebraska.
Like new. I'm not sure if this one qualifies for like new.
Well, so I sent you that picture. Folks, if you want to see it, just go to machinerypete.com, click on the blog, you'll see the picture. It doesn't look like new, but a couple things on it, because people were asking why the, you know, fill in the blank, why did this thing sell for $6,825?
Right.
Well, the guy that helped a guy helped his neighbor list it for sale on the online auction. And he hit me on Facebook, and he, you know, it might look a little dusty or whatever, but he said, Pete, it's like the nicest 24T that he'd ever seen. So functionally, okay, you know, it was working well. But beyond that, he said, I think the guy, and again, I'm kind of relaying here through secondhand, third hand, through Facebook chatter, so take it for what you will, but the guy who bought it was intrigued by the serial number on it, which was only two away from one that he's owned right along and loved. So here was an opportunity to have another, almost a sister serial number. Yeah. And, you know, some people might say, well, that's whatever. I don't, that doesn't mean anything to me. And hey, that's totally understandable. But for a lot of people,
it means something to the buyer.
Number, it means something to the buyer. And again, he wasn't the only one bidding on it. So again, $6,825. And now, I did have people in the Facebook thread going, oh, I better dust mine off in the shed. I guess mine just went up in value. Well, I'm not saying that necessarily, people. But it will bend my average auction price a little bit higher. But used, really good used small hay equipment has been hot. We've talked a lot about it for the last 6 months, Chip. So I'm an extreme example here.
Yep. Now, is this an example of some of the... You know, I'd hesitate to call it a barn find, but if you've got something like this tucked away, should you be checking out, seeing what the backstory on that piece of equipment might be, telling the story out on Facebook? Because it might just take telling the story about, hey, look what I've got sitting in the back of the shed, where somebody might step up and say, listen, I want that.
Absolutely, Chip. That's a great point to bring forward, and I got two things here. One is that, you know, most of our listeners here, I would guess, maybe in the Midwest. So as Midwesterners, farm people, that's, we're not all about saying, oh my gosh, look at my baler, look how great it is. That's not who we are. That's not in our DNA. But you can do it in a way, and I've built out these platforms, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, just telling stories, sharing prices, and all this stuff. You know, learning the history on it is very important. And now here's another one. I think sometimes people just, I don't know, it's weird. But so yesterday I posted a picture or a video, YouTube video, of a 1990 John Deere 4955 that sold in Kentucky on Saturday. Super nice, low hours, 2,632 hours, went for $64K. Second highest auction price in 7 years on a 4955. Now, on the YouTube video, people started commenting, and one guy hopped on there and he said, hey, Pete, we own a 4955 with serial number 1001, which that is the first one. And he said it's got under 3,600 hours on it. And he asked me, Pete, do you think that serial number might make it worth a little more money? And, I mean, you can't shout in a reply on YouTube, but I wanted to just... Can I go beyond capital letters here and say, yes.
Right.
I mean, again, that I told him, I said, you're sitting on a gold mine.
Yeah.
Whether or not you ever want to sell it, I don't know, but there'd be people all over the world that would want that tractor. So it's amazing.
Wow. Okay. Let's talk about that auction that happened there in Spring Valley.
Yep, kind of northwest part of Wisconsin, great country up there, Spring Valley. Yeah. They had a sale on Friday. Tim and Jody Whiff, Farm Retirement Auction, by my good friends at Maring Auction Company, came up from Kenyon, Minnesota to do the sale. Matt and the crew, they get all over the place here in the Midwest, do an awesome job. But they had a 2014 John Deere 8270R tractor with only 232 hours. So here we go again, 6 years old, like new. Sold for $189,000, and again, I just compile and report facts, folks. So fact is, that's the highest one that's ever sold at auction. The previous high was 187.5, but get this, that was on June 30th of 2015, so over 5 years ago. That was in Platteville, Wisconsin, so apparently 8270s are hot in Wisconsin. But that one only had 14 hours on it when it brought 187.5. So now over 5 years later, 200 hours, you go 189, so again, shows you what this low hour, it's like moths to a flame, basically, because the cost of new is so stinking.
Exactly. All right. Hey, buddy, we are almost out of time, but I got to know where you're going this week.
We're filming two auctions, Machinery Pete TV. Hope you can make it out, folks. Friday, I'll be in Worthington, Minnesota. Jaycox Implement Dealer Inventory Reduction Auction. Really good stuff on the sale. Check it out, wheelerauctions.com. And then the next day, Saturday, August 1st, I'll be in Granville, Iowa. The Neuenhuis Farm Estate Auction by Vanderwerf & Associates. VW72.com is the website. Hope you can make it out. See you at the sale, folks.
All right. And you've got to check out the blog about what somebody considers the best lawnmower ever made. The old John Deere 318.
Yes.
You just go to machinerypete.com. He'll have the story for you there. All right, Greg. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, see you next week, Chip.
You bet. That's Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. We've got Secretary Chow up next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, I tell you what, we keep stringing together these days of export sales announcements from USDA.
Yeah, more sales this morning, Chip. China and Mexico took U.S. soybeans, 10th consecutive day. Unfortunately, it's not leading to much price performance here to the upside. Softened up a little bit here mid-morning. Did trade to the upside earlier. Meal actually led us, and meal is still trading firmer, but has backed well off its highs. And as a result, like I mentioned, soybeans are under a little bit of price pressure here.
All right. Wheat, some double-digit losses in the hard red market. Is that weighing on corn too?
Yeah, I think it is. The HRW, like you mentioned, is leading us to the downside. SRW isn't far behind. We've broken down technically below last Friday's lows in both HRW and HRS contracts. Most of the SRW contracts are still holding above last week's lows. So that'll be something because, you know, that's more speculative based and higher volume, obviously, in the SRW contract. So if they break down below last Friday's lows, we could get another wave of selling in here. But, yeah, that does have corn under pressure.
Okay. All right. Take us over to the livestock markets. A little bit of strength going in live cattle.
A little bit. They start off with moderate to strong gains and have backed down. Last Friday's cattle on feed report was about as expected. No real surprises there. And the same could be said for the cattle inventory report. So while we started off like gangbusters this morning, there wasn't a whole lot of buyer interest behind that initial wave, and we've backed down, but we are still trading to the upside. Hog futures are also trading with a mostly firmer tone, although it's a light trade so far this morning.
Gotcha. Thanks, buddy. All right, that's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us this morning. I got Davis Michelson by my side. And Davis, we're not going to waste any time. We're going to get right to this because we have the U.S. Secretary of Transportation, Elaine Chao, on the line with us. Secretary Chao, thank you so much for making time for AgriTalk.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Great to be on your show.
Good. Okay. Secretary Chao, every Wednesday we have a farmer forum on AgriTalk, and quite often the conversation turns to infrastructure, some of the problems that we're dealing with in rural America with roads, bridges, airports, etc. Keeping up with the upkeep that needs to happen, it takes money. What kind of funds are available for infrastructure projects across rural America?
Well, that's a great question, because I'm here today to announce a new Department of Transportation initiative called ROUTES. And this is it stands for the Rural Opportunities to Use Transportation for Economic Success. So this is a new program that will help applicants in rural America navigate the very complicated landscape of all kinds of grants at the Department for Infrastructure. So this is really going to help rural America increase safety, increase infrastructure. These grants programs are very competitive, and it's very complicated to go through. So as you can imagine, you know, we've got it's all these big cities. They've got huge armies of consultants, to help them, you know, get through all these grants at the through the process. So we want to help rural America. And so this is called an applicant toolkit. And it is it can be found on our website. It's called Transportation. I'm going to repeat it a number of times. So I'm going to repeat it for the first time now, which is transportation.gov/rural/toolkit.
Okay. transportation.gov/rural/toolkit, right?
Right.
Okay.
Because, you know, I come from a rural state. I know firsthand how important America's rural transportation networks are.
Sure.
They've been instrumental in building and supplying urban areas throughout our nation's history. And yet, rural America has been long overlooked and neglected. I always tell people, rural America is not looking for handouts. We just want our fair share. And prior to this administration, only 21% of discretionary grants were given, awarded to rural areas. In this administration, this department has awarded more than 62% of these infrastructure grants to rural areas. So just the last go around, we had a bunch of what's called build grants. It's $900 million. It's over 20 projects were selected, and 53% of the money went to rural America. Again, it's not, they competed fair and square. But the most important thing is rural America's got to know how to compete. And again, they don't have armies of these consultants. So look at this applicant toolkit. It's going to be very helpful in knowing, how to apply for these grants.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Secretary Chow, when I open it up and I take a look at this toolkit, as a grant writer for a small town in rural America, what would I expect to see?
Well, first of all, if you go on the website, it's going to be prominently featured, so you don't have to click like seven times. It'd be right there. It's right in www.dot.gov. It's our transportation.gov. And so there's a icon there that says toolkit. Then you just click on that, and you can go through all the grant programs that are eligible for road repairs, road building, ports, bridges, airports. And we have discretionary grants. You know, we have airport grants. We have light rail transit grants. We have road grants called build and infra. The airport grants are called airport improvement grants. The light rail projects are called, CIG grants. So, again, we want equity in the distribution of these federal resources.
Okay. A lot of it, when we talk about it from a farmer's perspective, Secretary Chow, we're talking about commerce and the importance of having a reliable infrastructure in place so that we can move product up and down the roads, on the rail, and so on. But we're also talking about if we're upgrading the infrastructure, we're also improving the safety of where we're traveling out here. We can't forget that.
Absolutely. And safety is always the number one priority with the U.S. Department of Transportation, because people do not understand. One-fifth of Americans live in rural areas. 70% of America's road miles are in rural areas, carrying nearly 50% of the nation's truck traffic. And in addition, from a safety point of view, these investments are necessary because rural America's traffic fatalities are disproportionately high. And of the bridges, 80% of the bridges that need not that they're unsafe, but that they need repair work, 80% of those bridges are in rural areas. Yeah. And also, we forget, when people from urban areas, it's not as if they don't travel on these roads. 44% of rural passenger vehicle traffic are urban residents. They've got to get from one place to another, right? So they've got to go on rural roads.
Right.
So rural America is really, really important from a safety point of view, from infrastructure point of view.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I don't know the last time that I traveled in rural eastern Iowa here without seeing a weight restriction on a bridge on a gravel road. And that's those bridges, if they've got a weight restriction on them, they are in need of some improvement. So those are the kinds of things that we're looking to address with these grants, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then in addition to the grants, we understand farmers and this commerce point, you know, that you are making. I mean, farmers keep us fed, and we are so grateful to farmers. People don't mean it. The joke is people think that food just appears at supermarkets.
Right.
No, they appear because of the hard work and dedication of our farmers. And so we want to thank farmers and say that, you know, we're so grateful for them. And so to that end, we have also helped from a regulatory relief point of view.
Right.
I mean, there are hours of service rules that govern truckers that and farmers that make it very, very difficult for them to bring food to the rest of us. And these are commonsensical regulatory relief measures, and there are additional waivers during this COVID-19 period. But that, you know, that's more flexible, and that recognizes that, you know, farmers and truckers, they need more flexibility during this period, and so we are acknowledging that need, and we have actually finalized an hours of service rule that's going to really help.
And then, I believe those go into effect in September, correct?
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So see, people have got to listen to you because you are on top of things.
well, we try. We try. Shoot.
We've also helped truckers as well. They've also been so helpful in keeping the supply chain going. So they have expired licenses. We gave temporary waivers, knowing that DMVs aren't open around the country.
Yeah.
And we've also worked with different state governments to keep the rest areas open, to make sure there's food at these rest areas. So we're so grateful for farmers and truckers everywhere for what they
absolutely
do to help us.
Lifeblood. Lifeblood of the country.
Absolutely.
Right there, you got it. The grants, is it available to state, county, city governments, or is it also are they also available to the private sector?
They are available to different programs, have different criteria.
Okay.
So that's why it's best to go on the website and click on that icon, which is Applicant Toolkit. A lot of times it helps if you partner with another entity. It could be tribal, for example. There are tribal entities that are eligible for these grants as well. And then for private sector, they can partner with some, you know, local government. But a lot of these grants, they're not just government driven. I mean, there's, you know, they have to partner with, you know, private sector entities as well. So again, each program is different. Which is why it's hard to give kind of like a blanket answer. But welcome to our site. And again, we just realize that there's not effective outreach to rural America for safety reasons that I've mentioned, for the infrastructure needs reasons that I've mentioned. You know, rural America cannot be shortchanged any longer. I mean, we need to address the needs of rural America.
I really appreciate that message, Secretary Chow. Really appreciate
that
a lot.
And that comes from the top down. That comes from the top down.
Well, speaking of the top.
Throughout this administration.
Yeah, the top has been looking for a way to work with Republicans and Democrats on the infrastructure spending. This appears to be pushing that process forward.
The president has always emphasized the importance of investments in infrastructure, but he also believes that infrastructure has to be done on a bipartisan basis.
Right.
And
right now,
rural America is finally being paid attention to.
Good. Secretary Chow, we are out of time, but I just want to express a huge appreciation for you making time for coming on AgriTalk and filling in AgriTalk listeners. Let's get that website one more time.
It's www.transportation.gov/rural/toolkit.
Got it.
And
Secretary
thanks so much for having me, and invite me back again.
We will. Thank you so much.
next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
She complicated, left me anew to ride.
Jeez, Davis, were you laying down some tracks over the weekend or something? Is that what this is? I mean, it sounds like your horn playing.
Doing some tracking. A little tracking.
Yeah. Nice. Good stuff. All right. Mm-hmm. Welcome back. That was fun.
That was fun. Really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Announcing a new initiative, Routes. It's a toolkit that those looking for some funds to work on infrastructure, road, bridge, rail, short line rail, even some of the waterway stuff that they can go to and get some help in filling out the application process. I think it makes a lot of sense. Let's bring in Michael Steenhook right now. Michael is the executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition, joins us now. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing fine. So my question is, after having Secretary Chow on the show, are you having me on the show to bring down the curve?
No. We're stepping it up. You know we always go to you when we've got infrastructure issues to talk about. You know that. So.
You're trying to maintain a C average for your show, and you just had an A+, and now you need to get an F.
False. No way. It was interesting to hear her talk about rural America through these grants. These infrastructure grants, not looking for a handout, just looking for a fair shake at some of the grant dollars that are available out there. It seems like she was sincere about a refocusing on rural America there, Michael.
And we think that's important, and we commend the U.S. Department of Transportation for doing that. One of my observations in interfacing with the government, and particularly the federal government, is they do a really good job at information generation, but a very poor job at information dissemination. You know, they accumulate all this information and they make it available, but for rural counties, to expect them to go to such and such a report and find on page 922, paragraph B, that there's a grant program that's accessible to them. I don't know of many rural county engineers who would have the time and the ability to access that. So any opportunity to make this information and these resources with these grant programs accessible to rural America, I think it's a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll admit, I haven't taken a look at the toolkit yet because it's just now available. But I am going to take a look at that toolkit and see how user-friendly it is. But, Michael, any improvement would be welcome on this front, because there's just so many there are so many projects that need to happen that county governments can handle.
Yeah, the segment of the agricultural supply chain that is in most need of tender, loving care is also that, which is the rural area, is also the segment of our supply chain that has the fewest amount of resources to remedy that problem. And that's our counties and our local government entities. And so making these resources available is really going to be key. And so, you know, we look forward to having some successful grant applications in rural America.
Cool. Let's talk bigger projects. Let's talk locks and dams on the Illinois River. What's the latest?
Well, they're continuing to make progress. You know, there has been some delays already on one of those particular projects. I'm glad that the Corps of Engineers, they've announced that so we can make alternative arrangements. So, you know, the bottom line is we're still pleased that this work is proceeding. We're hopeful it'll be completed by the end of October so it doesn't interfere too much. I mean, it will interfere with the harvest surge, but we want to minimize that inconvenience.
Yep.
At the end of the day, we look forward to having locks and dams that are better maintained, better capitalized, more reliable.
Right. And in 2021, does it look to you like there's going to be some money spent on the upper Mississippi for some lock and dam improvements?
Yeah, we certainly hope so and think so. It's unfortunate that the Upper Mississippi River was so far back in the queue and the line.
Yeah.
But now that we're seeing some of these projects get completed, the Upper Mississippi projects are getting closer to the front of the line. So, we anticipate seeing some meaningful work being done, in the foreseeable future. And clearly for agriculture, that'll be really key.
Yeah. Well, here at Pool 10 on the Mississippi River there at Guttenberg is where the lock and dam is. Just north of the lock and dam, I saw over the weekend that they're doing some dredging, trying to widen the channel on a corner. And you question, geez, why would you be doing that? And then over the weekend, I saw a tug coming down with 12 barges instead of 15 because they can't make the dadgum corner. Those are the kind of projects that I know you keep tabs of those needs very closely, but at least we're seeing some progress made on it now.
Yeah, and you think about each individual barge handles 55,000, 60,000 bushels of soybeans. So take that times three. I mean, you're looking at 150,000 to 180,000 bushels of soybeans that are not being moved by that one tugboat, because the one tugboat could do either. And so all of a sudden that has a ramification on the economics of our industry. Because again, we're a very tight margin industry. We make our money by having a small profit margin, multiply that by millions and billions of bushels. Right. And when you can improve our transportation system, you improve those economics.
Think about it this way. That tugboat's cost went up 20% because they didn't have those three barges out front. It just, man, we can't let that happen, because that 20% in increased cost is coming right back in basis, or lack of basis, to farmers. We got to fix all this. Got to fix it all. Michael, thank you so much for your time today. And when we've got infrastructure questions, we're going to be coming your way.
Always enjoy it. Thanks, Chip, for having me.
You bet. You bet. That is Michael Steenhook. He is the executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. All right. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. Really appreciate it. You got to come back this afternoon. We've got Clark Neighbors from BIS Commodities. And tomorrow morning, we're going to talk with Congressman Austin Scott from Georgia.